The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everyone. It's quite a time. You know, I've heard more than a few people mention their disappointment that we couldn't do an in-person session and that we've had to regroup into another form. And while I have absolutely no doubt that what will happen tomorrow at the beginning of Ango will be magnificent and will be a wonderful retreat, there still is longing for things to be other than they are. And I'm thinking a lot about that predicament, wanting things to be different than they are. And it's come after a month of a little bit, you know, that really had a share of heartbreak, actually. And you know, there was an unexpected loss of a friend and an artist I admire a great deal, Louise Fishman. And even she's featured, I've been spending a lot of time with her because she's in this film I'm making. And I was shocked to lose her. And then there was a more like intimate and present illness and death of my beloved dog, Remy. And just a word about how I'm approaching this is that I think one of the treasures that I've come to appreciate about our practice is that it's really in the mud. You know, it's in the mud that we encounter ourselves. And in this longing and heartbreak, we find the fertile ground to explore who we are in this intimate morass and miracle of our lives. So in the past, when I've done these talks, I've usually brought a koan to the talk, but I really am led to this talk today by a koan that I've been studying. I've been working with it for a while, at least 4 weeks, 6 weeks, I'd been working with it, and all these things started to happen around me. And the koan was working with it, I think helped me helped me garner a lot from the experience, I'll say it that way. So the koan is Senjo and Her Soul Are Separated. It's case number 35 in the Mumenkan. And in it, Master Gosho asked the monk, "Senjo and her soul are separated. Which is the true one?" And one of my attractions to this particular koan is it's a folk tale. It's based on a folk tale from the Tang dynasty in China, which was a time of remarkable achievement. All kinds of things were being invented in China, gunpowder, air conditioning, all these things that Google informed me of that I really didn't know. But it was also a time of great instability, and it's a time just like our own, basically, very much like our own. So in the village of Koshu, Shokan had a daughter named Senjo, who he loved very dearly. And since childhood, Senjo, her heart pal, her best friend, was a boy named Ochu. And Ochu and Senjo grew up you know, playing together. And one day Chokan saw them playing and started teasing them and said, "Oh, wow, when you two get older, you're definitely going to be husband and wife." And since they really had an affinity for each other, they took him at his word that this, that they would be married. But unfortunately, when Sanjo became of age, her father informed her that he'd arranged a marriage with another man. And Sanjo and Ochu were heartbroken. So much so that Ochu, he couldn't bear the thought of living in this village, watching her married to someone else. So he got in a boat and he started going downstream to another village. And as he was, he left at night, and as he was rowing, he saw this figure running along the riverbank, following him. And when he went closer to see who this was, it was Sanjo. And so they fell into each other's arms. He brought her onto the boat and they went downstream and they settled in another village and married and had two children and lived their lives in relative contentment until about 5 years later. Sanjo, in particular, started feeling guilty that she just disappeared one night. Her family had really no idea what happened. And Chokan also felt guilt. So they decided to go home and try and patch things up. And so Ochu would go to the father, Chokan, and get on his knees and beg forgiveness for what they had done in hopes that they could heal this family. And so when he went up, they got to the village and Ochu asked Sanjo to stay in the boat. So he went to the father and got down and deeply apologized to Chokan for their actions that he and Sanjo took off. And Chokan was incredulous. He was like, "What girl are you talking about?" And Ochu said, "Your daughter, Sanjo." "Sanjo? She's upstairs in bed. She's been comatose ever since the day you left. She hasn't said a word." And there was great confusion, and it was decided that someone would go and get Sanjo out of the boat. So they get Sanjo and they bring her towards the house. But something remarkable happens. As she approaches the house, Sanjo in the bedroom gets up and starts leaving the house. And so the two of them see each other, smile, walk towards each other, and become one. And that uniting in that moment is something I've been working with, because it's really a story about longing. Longing for things to be other than they are. And the story has significance. Personally, I relate to it, and I think many women relate to it, because this woman is being told left and right what she could do, be doing by men. And this may sound futile, but, you know, frankly, I have aunts who had to elope because they couldn't marry the man they wanted to. I mean, it's not really that old a system that we're talking about here. And it also has significance to me as someone who grew up queer pre-Stonewall, in that, you know, all my love growing up, and I knew I was a lesbian from like a very young age. I didn't necessarily know what to call it, but I knew to keep it quiet and to keep it inside and to basically hide that part of me. All my love was as if in a dream, because I had no safe space outside. So, you know, in terms of thinking about Senjo and her experience, I mean, my Senjo moment during the time of AIDS activism was in 1989 at the, it was a reclaim, the first Reclaim Pride March. ACT UP basically said, we're not going to do corporate pride. We're just going to have a spontaneous march up Sixth Avenue. And I was shooting it. And at one point, my friend took the camera off my shoulder and aimed the camera at me. And I just blathered out, this is the happiest day of my life. No shit. I am on here on the street, walking up Fifth Avenue with a bunch of people that I know and I love, and it's just all here. And that was my Senjo moment. It was very elating. I mean, it wasn't something that was a permanent state, but just that moment when you can allow yourself the joining, that almost like a miraculous clicking, and you know, that interests me. And I also, I'm kind of interested in knowing what that is. What is it like? And for this, it's good to look to Master Gosho, who had the wisdom to take Senjo's story and pose it as a koan. And he was a very erudite kind of guy. He was a scholar monk who studied under many different teachers, but he still wasn't finding peace of mind. And one day while he was studying text, now this is one of these kind of awakenings that come not from an encounter, but while encountering text. So it's a little bit of a different connection, but it's still in these words. So he finds this quote that says, it is said that when a bodhisattva sees with the wisdom eye, function and principle are one. So subjectivity and objectivity are one. And then a non-Buddhist philosopher argued in this quote, if subjectivity and objectivity aren't separated, how can that fact itself be proved? In other words, they have to be separate in order to define them, he's trying to say. And the Buddhist scholar Genjo responded, it's like when one drinks water and knows for oneself whether the water is cold or warm. It's a beautiful written description, I think, because all of us have maybe can relate to that. Oh yeah, you drink the water, or sometimes if it's really hot, you don't even drink it, you stop before it comes, but you're in that moment. There's a real intimacy to that moment. You drink the water for yourself when you know. I had a kind of drink the water moment, Senjo moment, kind of moment, this last week when I was caring for this dog that very much beloved. And kind of, I have to say, culturally, it's a little bit hard for me because I grew up in this Italian American peasant family where, you know, on a farm, there are lots of animals and pets are rare. They're rare. And when they're around, they're not in the house or they're not, they have their jobs too. So there isn't this kind of doting on, I've become a dog person, doting on dogs. And I knew I was really throwing away centuries of programming, you know, when I found myself walking down my now trendy neighborhood street saying to the dog, do pee pee for mama. You know, it was, that's it. So I have someone with a dog in the family. And when that dog is dying, every being, even the walls of the house are sad. It's just a pervasive kind of atmosphere. And, you know, he won't eat. And when, you know, you're thrilled, he takes a few bites, then 20 minutes later, he throws it up. You know, I've been around caring for a dying person. It's kind of like this too. But they can tell you what they need. And so I found myself feeling at what, because this went on for a while and I couldn't sleep. Lori couldn't sleep. We were both really in a rough situation. And at one point I found myself upstairs feeling miserable about Remy. And I had my son Joe moment. It's like, wait a second, Remy's downstairs on the couch. What are you doing upstairs? So I went downstairs and I sat next to this poor dying dog. And I just started petting him and calling him love names. And for the first time in a week, he licked his lips, which is a dog smile. And so that was it. And I was able to, Lori and I were able to kind of hold him in that space until we put him down the next day. So, it doesn't take pain away. Senjo's story doesn't take pain away. It's not denying suffering or any of that. It's just allowing you to let your life unfold without laying this whole other layer of activity on it. So, you know, part of it is, when does it happen? But, you know, the Senjo's spell was broken when she saw herself and smiled. My spell, our spell, whatever you're doing a Senjo on right now, there's that a realization, our practice sometimes, and this is the beauty of what a koan can do, is it can come in maybe on some of these situations and just allow you a little bit more of a framework to see what your patterns are. And I continue to work with Senjo because I've spent so much of my life as if in a dream. And Senjo and her soul, they need to hang out. There's a verse to this koan that's really beautiful. Ever the same, the moon above the clouds, different from each other, the mountain and the valley. How wonderful, how blessed. Is this one or two? I look out at the sea of faces and I wonder, what can be accomplished